Okay, Jamie Thompson and I just talked about healthy children, healthy communities for about an hour and a half in a just the previous session. So bear with me as I go way past all this, and I'm sorry. But I wanted to just get to the part about outreach. You've heard so much about school community, and that's a lot of what we talked about involving families in our program. But I just want, I'll talk just briefly about what we do, another point of what we do when we talk about the whole school and the whole community. And it is called outreach. It's a school-based outreach for kids to have health insurance and health care, specifically Medicaid services and any services above and beyond that that we can find when kids don't qualify for Medicaid services. And what we did was, and again, briefly, because we talked about this for almost an hour a little while ago, but we recognized the need for some other access to healthcare beyond ourselves. Jamie and I were school nurses and worked in elementary schools, high schools, middle schools, and a combination of the all, when we had to take more than one school, as Martha pointed out previously, and recognized that we couldn't do it all. We couldn't be there for the families. Unfortunately, we couldn't be, always be there for the children, and had to find something else for all these kids in the school setting. So we wanted to get them health insurance so that we can get them health care outside of the school setting. And one of those ways was to look at how can we outreach these families, how can we get them to sign up for the health insurance. And so our program was focused on these four bullet points. How can we do this at low or no cost at all? How can we emphasize the partnerships that we already had so we didn't have to do a lot of the work, and build on the strengths that our schools have, because a lot of people, except for Penrose, don't understand how strong a school can be, and know your population, what its weaknesses are, what its strengths are, and how you're going to be best able to provide these services. So we called our program now Healthy Children, Healthy Communities, and did this huge assessment on our population to see who it was that didn't have health insurance, who didn't have access to health care, why they didn't have access, and then built on that. We looked at what is available to the kids to get health insurance, whether it be state-funded programs. The Oregon Health Plan is our Medicaid program. It also includes our poverty-level medical assistance program. And we also have a program called the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, FEHOP. And that looks at if you're not eligible for the Oregon Health Plan or for Medicaid services, what else is it that we can do? And actually, this program is really very successful. It's not an insurance. It's more of a hookup to insurance. So Kaiser participates in it, Blue Cross Blue Shield participates in it. And this program will actually pay the premiums once you get your health insurance if you meet the qualifications. The other thing we did that was the most successful thing we did was we bugged health and hospital systems and medical groups to death. We visited them over and over and over and over, and had our head in the door so much that they finally started taking us seriously, asking us what it is we really wanted. And what we wanted was them to take the opportunity to give kids health insurance when nobody else would. And most of what we're talking about is the kids that are undocumented, who don't qualify for Medicaid programs, at least in Oregon. I know some states allow undocumented kids in Medicaid, but not very many, I don't think. And then the other population that was extremely needy and uninsured was those that were just over the income limits for Medicaid services. In Oregon, it's 180% of the poverty level. That's the cutoff. I think it's now 200%, actually. But, you know, 200% of the poverty level is barely scraping it. I mean, that is not enough to be able to allow you to pay high health insurance premium costs. So we looked at the population that's 200 to 400% of the poverty level. And that's where we went to the health plans and the hospitals, and we said, if you don't have the ability to see these kids and not charge them, why don't you give us the money and we'll go out and we'll find the kids that are eligible so that you, when they come to see you, you have some reimbursement costs. Plus the school-based health centers, and you know, I don't know if you can get reimbursement for what you do in your school district, but having kids on the Medicaid plans allows that reimbursement to come in and allows for money then to flow into those health programs that are in schools. So that's what we were looking for. And lo and behold, Kaiser Permanente stepped up to the plate and said, okay, we will insure kids for you. We'll let them see the doctors, we'll let them have their prescription plans, and we'll see how it goes, and we'll do it in one school. And we pushed enough to allow for 17 elementary schools. In the beginning of the plan, we signed up kids for Kaiser health insurance. These were undocumented kids, and again, those between 200 and 400% of the poverty level. And it was great. The kids had, well, actually we had a problem at first. We signed all these kids up for health insurance, and they all had their little plastic Kaiser cards, and nobody was using health insurance. Kaiser called us and said, nobody comes. You have all these kids with these health cards. Where are they? And so we sent a little survey out in language appropriate materials, and we got them back, and they said, oh yes, we have health insurance because we have a card from Kaiser. What do we do with this card? You know, do we put it somewhere or take it somewhere? So we did, we realized the error of our ways, and we did a massive education campaign to teach people how to use an American system of health care. And that was a big eye-opening experience, and it took us quite a while to get kids and families figuring out how to use that health plan. And then it skyrocketed, and they were using it. We even had on our survey, and I didn't tell the other group this because I just thought of it, one family wrote back on their survey, this is great. I use the card for all my children. And I thought, why? Kaiser didn't pick that one up. But all of the kids had physicals on one card. So I don't know how they did that, but they did. But anyway, it was, and when we assessed it after 12 months, there were about 300 kids on the program, and we asked, and Kaiser came back to us and said, okay, we spent $1 million on these 300 kids, and they were not upset. They assumed that they'd be spending more, but actually what happened was two children used $800,000, and all of the others, the 298 kids, used only $200,000 of it. One child, as soon as she got on health insurance, was sent to the doctor, and they found out she had a brain tumor, and so she was operated on and is back in school and doing really well. And the other child also had a chronic health condition that was pretty severe that was treated. So if it wouldn't have been for those two, we really would have only used $200,000. And recognizing that those two were, what, maybe 3% of the total population, or however that calculates out, Kaiser said, okay, you can go ahead and pick some more schools. So this year, there are 75 schools participating in the program. And actually, I neglected to describe this accurately. 75 elementary schools participate in the program. But what Kaiser, and it was only available to elementary school students. So what Kaiser said was, we recognize that obviously brothers and sisters are using the cards, so we might as well give cards to all of the brothers and sisters. So if one elementary school student is eligible, anybody in the household who attends public school is also eligible. So we took in all of the children in the family so that we could. And this is one point we brought up to Kaiser. How can you say one child's going to be healthy? That's not going to work. We have to make the whole family healthy in order for that one child to be healthy also. So there are 75 elementary schools participating in the program now. But I would imagine, Jamie, how many schools are in Multnomah County that are middle and high schools? There must be 150 schools that are participating by now. So it is a huge program, and Kaiser. Yeah, the seven school districts. Plus, we took on our neighboring counties because they were like, well, this isn't fair. Why are you guys doing it? So we stretched out into our neighboring counties and have the program there now. But one thing Kaiser, and it's not just Kaiser, it was our Providence system, and it was, like you said, a lot of granting, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Northwest Health Foundation, the Oregon Community Foundation, they all gave us money to run the program so that, I got ahead of myself, sorry, so that we could just insure tons of kids. And I brought this slide along because our most resistant group of people were our school nurses when we began the program. And I wasn't shocked by that because if you're all school nurses, you know how busy you are in a day's time. You have so many students to see and so many health plans and, you know, just so much to do. When we went to them and said, we want you now to take on getting kids health insurance, they were like, no, I just can't handle one more thing. But then we gave them this little teeny tiny referral form and said, all you have to do for us is write down their name and their phone number and their parents' name. We will take care of the rest of that. You know the population, you know the family, let us take it from there. And so they did. And this is kind of what it started to look like. And I should have gone this way because the school nurse was the link to everybody that finally got health access for and the school-based health clinic. But the family then connected with the outreach piece, and then there was access to health care for them all. And I think we have some, I can go back to this, but I want to get to the diagram here. So this is the school nurse saying, I don't have time and I just can't do it. But the next year when they found out that these 54 kids now had access to health care, they were kind of like, oh, okay, so we do have a doctor or a health care provider after all, we'll start helping. But the school nurses continued to be really busy with a lot of things, and it was really hard for them to ask parents about health insurance. So in 2004, we hired one outreach worker, and he introduced himself to all the school nurses, and he was very personable and very charming, and he made friends quickly with all of them, and all of a sudden, they knew that he was gonna contact the families and he was gonna help these families, and we went up to 814 kids that we had touched in that program. Today we have only four outreach workers, and they have done a tremendous job, just a tremendous job. They are out in the community constantly. They are working with the health departments. They're working with the Department of Housing. They're working with food banks. Anything families needed, because we realized health is one thing, but if you don't have everything else you need, you know, healthcare is gonna go right back down again, because housing and food is gonna always come first before healthcare. So our outreach workers really made a difference. This is the low income, children in this in our county in Oregon, and this is the amount of kids that are on the health Oregon Health Plan or Medicaid services right now, and this is the difference our outreach workers made. And this is just within the last year that they've been able to go from here to here. So we've kind of closed the gap from 30% uninsured to 20% uninsured. Now, how do we keep funding it? And currently I'm not working with the program. It has been taken over by another nurse right now, but our large health systems continue to fund this for us because they see the benefit in getting kids into preventative and well care instead of using their emergency rooms like they had been doing. We also have been writing grants. We've been just trying to get money from everywhere. The last thing that we've done is we finally went to the governor, and as Jamie told everybody in the last session, we have been so lucky in Oregon that our governors are so invested in healthcare and really trying hard to get the whole state to realize that healthcare is gonna drive us forward to the future. Our past governor was an emergency room physician, and our current governor is as just as invested in healthcare as he was. And so he allowed us to work with his Healthy Kids plan, and we designed the outreach program for the state of Oregon. Now, it's not in effect yet, but hopefully it will be in the coming years. We did develop the school-based outreach program, and it is already being duplicated in many areas of Oregon. These are our new pieces to work on. We'd like to get them to establish a school-based outreach coordinator at the state level. And I think as maybe as Martha was talking, I was thinking, with all your information, wouldn't it be great if they also had a coordinator, a school health coordinator, and maybe they do, in Washington, to look at the numbers that you were showing of how many school nurses are in school buildings and how healthcare is given, and and make that, instead of just on the state level, make it on a national level. One of the things that that would do, would it would centralize our data and our data analysis, and it would also encourage use of a website that could have tools for everyone to use throughout the state and, you know, throughout the country, if that was possible. California has the same outreach program here, and they have a wonderful website with all the tools that you need to start an outreach program in your own school district. Every letter, every little piece, every little mailing that you'd send out to families, it's just a great resource. And we are hoping within the next couple years that the smaller website and database we have in Oregon will grow to be like the one in California. And one of the funding issues that we found, especially with school-based health centers, that is, these kids have health insurance. Their school-based health centers are being reimbursed because they are federally funded sites. And so they can now be in the Medicaid reimbursement, which is bringing funding into their pockets also. Jamie, please add. I think I went through it pretty fast because it was, I wasn't sure where to start. But, oh, I only have 2 minutes, I didn't go that fast. So if anybody has any questions, please, or for any of us, please feel free.
I'll answer the question you asked.
Oh, okay.
About having a school nurse or a school health person at the national level. We've actually been trying, the National Association of School Nurses has been trying to get a school nurse at the Department of Education. And right now, we haven't had much luck with that, but we're hoping in the new administration that they will be more open to that. And then also, there is a bill before Congress that was entered by Representative Carolyn McCarthy from New York to increase the numbers of school nurses in schools. And for the CDC to do an evaluation project of what the impact of increasing the ratio of school nurses per student would be. And that is House Bill 6201. Senator McCarthy, who is a nurse, was the sponsor. And Lois Capps from California, who was a school nurse, was the co-sponsor. And we have 8 representatives who have signed on to that bill.
So is it a state law in most states that they have school nurses?
No, it is not. It's a state law in, I believe it's about 30 states, and I do have the number, I could give it to you, that they must have school nursing. I'm not aware. I know that in South Carolina they're required to have a nurse in every elementary, and that's brand new. As of 1 year old, and then in Delaware, they're required to have a nurse in every building. So the percentage of buildings in Delaware that have a school nurse is 100%.
Could you say that bill again?
The bill is House Bill 6201, and if anyone, it's a very short bill, it's very brief, and if anybody wants to look at it, it's available on the NASN website, www.nasn.org.
Yeah, and I know Washington State also made some recommendations for 1 to 700, and they have a 10-year plan to work to that, but it's not mandated at all. In Oregon, and I'm so happy for this, they've just formed a school nurse task force in the legislature, and they are looking at data, and I'm sure using much information from NASN to hopefully come up with some recommendations for our state also.
Any other questions? Robert, on your program that you ran, how did you work transportation, and how long did it last for after school?
Most of our kids live in the neighborhood, so they're walking, or we've worked it out that the parents are coming to pick them up, and we've all the after-school instructors, anyone who has any straggling kids, they bring them to my office, and I call them. So I call the parents, and of course we get the emergency numbers and all of that, because one of our goals is actually to have programs for our special ed kids after school. Those kids generally live further away because we're kind of a regional site for special ed programs, so that's why we started the programs during the school day for them. So it seems to work out. The first week of September, we only lost about three kids. Some kids came on the wrong day. It's been a teaching thing for the kids. Like if you have karate Monday and Wednesday and they show up Tuesday, and every day kids ask me, is karate today, is skateboarding today? So we're just training them to get it correct. And of course, I have signs posted in my office now, what day, what program is. So. Any other questions? Yeah, that seems to be a problem. We do the screening, but what happens next? Mm-hmm. In Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Eagles have a vision van that comes. Now, the problem is there's 274 schools. I can get the van maybe once a year, so I have to pick my worst kids to be seen. We're great at the screenings. It's the follow-up that's tough.
Well, it's just interesting that you mentioned that children had difficulty remembering which days their events were, because a research study by Linda Kimmel about vision follow-up showed that many of the families did not own calendars. If they did own a calendar, it was wall decoration. No, seriously. And in fact, when they did home visits, the school nurse would offer to write the date of the vision follow-up on that calendar, and they were like, no, that's decoration. So it's a serious issue in that there's a lot of frustration among school nurses. Why aren't the parents taking them to immunizations? Why aren't they getting the required physical exam? Why aren't they doing the vision follow-up when there's a lack of time management, and any appointment that can't be stored in memory is not ever going to be followed through on. So it's not a lack of will, but a lack of their paradigm of how they manage their family. Yeah. Right. And that has tremendous educational implications to not have the care from the mandated vision screening not occur for 18 months. I thought I would answer my own question about how many volunteer school nurses there were in our sample, and it was two schools were manned 100% by volunteer school nurses, and there's a state law in Florida that covers RNs who work in schools with insurance if they are volunteering their time.
The school nurses are doing the dental screening?
Yes. But we have a screening team, which is part of the grant. So the screening team goes into the schools to do mass dental screening, and then the nurses can also refer kids to get on the van if it's not their school, and then someone else from the school will drive them over. We don't drive the kids. So the counselors have to be
nurses. Of course, it has to be a problem.
Right.
Yes, because you have nurses examining teeth now.
Well, it's actually mandated in quite a few states to do dental screening.
Yeah, it's not our vision is and hearing, but Multnomah Education Service District, where we worked out of, handled the hearing. So they did have resources for hearing, but not for dental.
In Allegheny County, where Pittsburgh is, our county health department does a dental sealant program.
Yeah,
where they take volunteer dentists and volunteer dental hygienists and dental students, and they have Maxie the Molar is their icon. Some dental students get suckered into wearing the costume. They go out and they do education, and they do dental sealant screenings on all the kids, and then the kids in the schools get dental sealants applied to their permit.
We have dental sealants and fluoride. They provide fluoride too, but when it comes to finding dental care, that's just a huge issue.
The dental community is not as forthcoming with honorary services.
Right. It's our Northwest Medical Team. They're the ones who go to disasters everywhere.
Yeah.
But we have to pay for a lot of
officials. And one of the issues is who's done, especially in rural Oregon, who's the dentist is pushed to the max.
Yes.
There's just no resources.
Yeah, that's our experience, that if there's only one in a community
how can
or
they?
None, they personally cannot provide all of the free service that area would require.
But the question is, where's the dental societies?
Well, but the other issue is I hate to go back to money, but dentists are not reimbursed well for the services they provide anyway. I'm sure my own dental service, I have to pay, we have good dental insurance, but the chunk that I have to pay after the insurance is paid is fairly high.
I know.
So already, even if they're insured patients, the reimbursement rate is low, and then you're asking them to take on the children that are uninsured. And dental insurance is less common than health insurance. So you're going to have a lot larger population of people who are not insured for dental than even for health care. So it's a huge problem, and I actually have no dentists in my family. I'm not defending the dentists, but it comes down to funding. And I heard a session yesterday where they said, lawyers aren't expected to give their care for free. Bankers don't do what they do for free, and yet we expect health care providers to provide services for free. So.
Why we need a team of people.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.